alpha dog. I love that.
Welcome to the Alpha Dog Capital Deal Flow Channel. This is where we talk about alternative investments that you cannot find on Wall Street. Listen and learn about deals, funds, syndications, and business ventures. We are not investment advisors, and we do not give investment advice, but we do talk about investments you may want to consider. Don't forget, always do your own due diligence. Welcome to another edition of the Alpha Dog Capital Deal Flow Channel. And today I'm speaking with Neil Bawa, and we're going to have a very interesting conversation. Neil has an interesting background. And Neil, I want you to just take a few minutes to let everybody know who you are. You have a background in the tech industry, and now you're really full-time in multifamily real estate. And I don't want to do any injustice to what I just said. So why don't you take a few minutes, tell us about your background, and then kind of how you transitioned into real estate.
Absolutely. So I like to start by saying, I don't feel like I've ever transitioned to real estate. I was a data scientist, and I am a data scientist. When I was a data scientist before, I was applying it to various technologies. And now I'm a data scientist that applies the use of data science to real estate. So my day job in a odd sort of way hasn't changed a great deal. It's just much more profitable and fun than it used to be 10 or 15 years ago. So as you can tell, I'm a geek, I'm a nerd, very schooled in Silicon Valley thought. Data science is, computer science is a degree. Data science is my, chosen profession. And so ran a technology company from 1999 to 2013, took it all the way to an exit. So we went from having 10 employees to 400 employees at exit. And what I felt really good about during that time was that we were using technology, even though it wasn't a core technology business, it was an education business. And so we felt like we could use technology in other areas. Also, we were making a huge amount of cash flow. I had the big fat tech salary. And I live in Texifornia, John. So I was paying 53% a year in taxes, including Medicare. So as you can imagine, I started investing in real estate myself for basically tax benefits, no partners, just me, just my money. And it sort of kept building on its own because I came across, I asked myself this question, where are the data scientists in real estate? Because real estate is the largest asset class in the world, bigger than the stock market. 326 trillion. So I felt like, wait a minute, there's got to be, there absolutely have to be data scientists in real estate. And I saw that there were some data-driven people in real estate that I respect, but there weren't any data scientists. So I started my own meetup, with a focus on data in 2010. Four people showed up the first time, and I was pretty happy with that. And then 10 showed up the second time. 6 months later, I had 100. So I was just very lucky that I was in the geekiest place on planet Earth, which is, Silicon Valley. And so there were lots of geeks and nerds that wanted to hear about application of data science to real estate. And it sort of just, snowballed from there. And it really took a long time because that was 2010. I didn't actually take other people's money until 2014. And today we have a $1 billion portfolio. We have 800 investors. We've exited, a bunch of projects at about a 47% annualized level. And a lot of that is really tied back to the use of data science to find small cities that nobody else is investing in.
Yeah, that's incredible. So you said a lot there, but that transition, you were working in tech industry, you had these meetup groups, and then It sounds like it was more theoretical. You were talking about data as it relates to real estate, but not really, you weren't investing in real estate yet? Or is that what opened your eyes to the
I was investing in it personally myself. So I was telling my story, and that story sort of developed over time, right? So it's 2009, 2010. Everyone in my family is telling me I'm the greatest idiot of all time starting a real estate, meetup in 2010 when everyone's getting slaughtered. And I'm like, no, that's not what the data is showing me. So I basically said, let's do the same thing that we do in technology. Let's try and figure out what the data sources are to figure out profit-making schemes in real estate. And so we started mining websites like Zillow and other websites back then that were pretty famous and gathering data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, sticking it into a software, writing some algorithms, writing some, what if statements to see which ones came out the most profitable. And surprisingly, I discovered that the city that came out on top was a tiny little town called Madera, California. And it was in California. And I was in California. I was like, I got to go to this city. So I go there, discover that I can buy brand new 4 and 5 bedroom homes, brand new, for $90,000, where their cost of construction is $200,000. So it costs $200,000 to build, but you can buy them for 90. And I felt like I was a kid in a candy shop. So I was buying them just like you buy candy. I was buying them left and right, as many as I could get my hands on, me, my immediate family, my friends. I was buying them for everybody. And people are like, are you crazy? Why would you want to buy so many properties in Madera, California? And I was like, because data science shows that Madera, California has the biggest supply-demand gap. And on top of that, the prices have fallen the most in Madera, California compared to anywhere else in the US. So, you know, flash forward today, obviously my rents are 3 times higher. My property values are 3 times higher. So I really liked what I was doing. And I started explaining how I came across Madera, California to people in these meetups. And it turned into a course, not a presentation, but a course called Location Magic. And Location Magic was basically the simple version of what we do in data science. It was the, okay, well, instead of spending 17 hours, you know, chewing through 17 different metrics, let's just look at the top 5 metrics and figure out how to get this done in 15 minutes for any given city in the US, how to get this done in 15 minutes. So the obsession was to bring data science to the masses, to bring it to somebody who could basically go to a party with John Marion, and John says, hey, I think that this little city called Idaho Falls is pretty amazing. And right there, you should be able to whip out your laptop and tablet, and 15 minutes later, you should know how Idaho Falls compares to any other city in the US. That was the objective. That was a mission statement. And so we built that course around it. One guy helped me with that. I had, you know, people in the Ukraine that were doing the mining, the data science. And it sort of snowballed from there. By 2011, 2012, people were calling me to conferences to teach this sucker. And they were like, you know, are you going to charge money? And I'm like, no, just give me a free ticket. I'll show up. And they're like, what are you selling? It's like, I don't have anything to sell. I'm running a technology company, right? I mean, this is just my story. And I really enjoy telling it to people because I get to go to these huge conferences where there's people like Brandon Turner presenting right next to me. I presented next to Brandon Turner this Saturday. But you know, we've presented together a number of times. So these are famous people that I get to present next to in the same conference. And I was pretty chuffed about that. Because I wasn't really a real estate guy. I had a bunch of my own real estate. So it sort of transitioned over time. The conferences kept getting bigger. The meetups kept getting bigger. And my investments kept getting bigger, you know, from single family to 2 units, then 4 units, then 7 units. Then, you know, then I sort of jumped all the way to 237 units. Now we have 4,800 units. So I think all along, I've just been playing. I've just been gathering interesting toys. As long as I apply data science to them, that's all I care about. And so I've gathered different kinds of toys. I've gathered multifamily toys and self-storage toys and industrial toys and built-to-rent toys and townhome toys. You know, and I like all of them. So I don't really have any particular obsession with any particular area, as long as it's a toy and data science says it's the best toy out there.
Okay, so there's a lot there too. I want to ask you in a minute, and I'm just going to mention it so I don't forget to get there. I want to kind of compare some of the content that I heard you talk about regarding single family houses and multifamily. It's just an interesting kind of compare and contrast kind of conversation and things that I hear from other investors. But before we get into that, you mentioned that you had, I think, 5 metrics that you focus on. I think you mentioned 19 and then you boiled down to 5, something like that.
Sure.
But one of them, I was consuming some of your content. You don't have much, you don't put much weight into the school district.
I don't.
And
I don't.
If you can jump into that just for a few minutes, why not? And what you know, people think a school district is really important, certainly for home buyers and where people want to live.
Right.
You know, that is a consideration for them. But from the investment standpoint and your data, that's not that important.
No, it's very important. So I'll explain to you why I don't have schools in my top 5 metrics. You're absolutely right. Home buyers care a great deal about schools, especially young home buyers, right? Who have, you know, younger kids. They care a great deal about schools. But granted, we're buying these for rentals, so maybe renters don't care as much, but it's still valuable because at some point you have to sell this property and it's a single family property. So you're probably going to sell it to an owner occupier. That person's going to care. So the big question is, okay, clearly Neil believes that, you know, schools should be in there. Why aren't they in there? The answer is very counterintuitive. My job in 2011 was to bring data science to the masses. So my goal there was to make it as simple as possible. So what I found, though, is that if I add schools in as the sixth metric, and I'll mention the other five if you want me to, I would end up with the exact same properties. So I took schools out for no other reason than because the other five factors were basically driving me in that direction. For example, you know, areas with good schools already sell at higher prices. Well, that was already factored in through the other factors. So I wasn't actually getting a set of properties that was any different when I applied schools. I mean, and obviously that's a generic statement. In every set of 100, there were probably two or three that would fall out because I wasn't using schools. So that was the only reason. Schools are an extremely important metric. And anyone buying single family for rentals should focus on schools. I can tell you, I do not focus on schools at all for multifamily, especially large multifamily, with certain exceptions. And we can nitpick over those if you want. But in most cases, some of the best multifamilies that I've had have had schools that are 3 out of 10. So my only rule is, you know, schools should not be 1 or 2 out of 10. As long as it's 3 out of 10, that meets my criteria for large multifamily. But with single family, most of the time, I will personally not buy a property if schools are not 6 out of 10. But what I find is when I use my five metrics, I end up with a data set where almost every property is already 6 out of 10.
So what are the other five metrics?
So the five key metrics are population growth, job growth, home price growth, income growth, and crime reduction, right? So once again, they seem, you know, fairly important, right? Population growth, job growth, home price growth, income growth, and crime reduction. Now, you know, for somebody who's a rookie and wants to basically just, you know, compare cities, you can apply them equally. So each one of them can have the same weightage. But somebody who wants to do it in a more advanced way, you can use job growth as double the weightage of the others. Got it? So you can have, you know, job growth basically is 40% and the other four are together 16%. So that's basically 15, 15, 15, and 15 for the other four. The job growth is 40%. So because of that, job growth is the only one of these five metrics where we only look at 12-month data. The others, we look at long-term data because we want to see a trend. But job growth, we found when we looked at trend, we actually couldn't improve profits. We found that the only thing that matters with job growth is how people feel about their jobs today. How they felt about them 2 years ago is irrelevant. So we only look at 12-month job growth. So luckily, of all of our five metrics, the only metric where information is always accurate is job growth. The reason for that is the government can't wait 2 years or 3 years. They're late on everything. You know, everything's like 2 years out of date. Yeah. But you can't do that for people who lose their jobs because you have to get a Social Security check to them next month. So job data in the US is always current. Right now, for example, we have June job data.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fascinating. Let's talk about comparing and contrasting single family asset class as an asset class compared to multifamily. And just to give you some background where I'm coming from, to give some context, I'm in the single family space. I've done this for years. You know, I have some multifamily opportunities and do some things with multifamily, but really I'm a single family house guy. And a lot of the guys that I know, they transition from single family to multifamily. And once they do that, they're like, single family is not really important to them anymore. They don't want to be involved in that. And they don't really talk much about that as an asset class. But one of your videos, or maybe more than one of them, really caught my attention because you were talking about multifamily and single family. And you seem to have a what I call the balanced perspective or realistic perspective, probably because you're looking at it from a data-driven viewpoint. And I'm just wondering if you can speak to that, if that makes any sense with the context that I set up.
I'll start by saying this. Most people that get into multifamily, they consume such vast quantities of the multifamily Kool-Aid right? They're drinking so much of this and they're smoking so much hopium that they lose that sense of perspective, right? So there are many advantages to the single family ecosystem that multifamily guys do not like to acknowledge, right? So multifamily has got the obvious advantages, right? You got the scale, you've got the fact that, you know, if you have a, you're a 10 unit and one tenant leaves, now 10% of your income's gone, so you can still pay your mortgage, where with a single family, you're losing 100% of your income at that point of time. And some of the others, I mean, you've got, you know, centralized leasing, you've got centralized, maintenance, you've got definitely significantly higher quality property managers. And those property managers, you know, especially for a 200 unit, the PM is dedicated, the maintenance staff is dedicated, the leasing agents are dedicated. So you'll get higher performance from people because your property is the only property they work on, right? So all of these should be fairly obvious to people about why, you know, more once people go from single family to multifamily, they don't come back. I'm one of those people that went from single family to multifamily and didn't come back. Point though is we tend not to talk about the inherent advantages of single family over multifamily. So the first one is this: multifamily is a business. The moment interest rates in the United States went up, 60 days later, multifamily prices automatically went down because a bank, knowing that your interest expense is going up, is not willing to give you the same amount of loans, right? So it's a business. You're buying into a business. Well, the value of that business immediately decreased within 60 days, decreased by 10 to 15% just because interest rates went up. Now, when you look at the US single family market, basically there is zero decline anywhere in the market. In fact, from when rates started to rise in February until now, we're recording this at the end of July, there is no major market in the US that has seen substantial declines. There's some that have seen maybe 3 or 4%, but overall, the US market is higher than it was in February. And you might say, why is that? Why doesn't the same thing that applied for multifamily apply here? Number one, banks use comps. Until comps fall, they will keep giving you these bigger loans. Number two, ARMs, adjustable rate mortgages, which have spiked from 3% to 15% from January to now, allow you to basically go out and still buy a bigger home. Number three, single family is not a financial purchase. It is an emotional purchase. Everyone buying a single family is buying it because they love living in a home as opposed to an apartment. And they're willing to basically stretch further than they should have from a business perspective. This means that single family over a 20 or 50 year timeframe will always appreciate more than multifamily. So if you're willing to kind of hold for extended periods of time, your appreciation side of your return is going to end up being higher than multifamily. Now, I would argue that the cash flow side would be higher on the multifamilies simply because you're probably paying less per door and you've got a lot more control on your maintenance, you know, and your leasing than you would have for single family. So pros and cons there. But, you know, single family has a lot of benefits. In the end, no one wants to live in an apartment. Everyone wants to live in a single family. And that is a huge advantage. Another thing is turnover. I don't hear people on the apartment side talking about turnover. The average tenant in the US lives in an apartment complex for 20 months. Which means every 20 months, you're going to lose a tenant and, you know, go through the process of cleaning it up and painting it and having it empty for a while and then leasing it and paying leasing costs. The average single family tenant tends to stay closer to 3 years. So you're not having that turnover cost as often as you would have for multifamily. And we do like to stay with multifamily, you know, turnover is the biggest killer of profit. But we don't really ever apply that back to the fact that single family has lower turnover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great insight. I appreciate you taking the time to compare and contrast the two. While we're at it, you kind of implied a little bit of economic information. And today I don't usually do this on my podcast, but today I'm going to put a timestamp on this. It's July 25th, 2022. And the market is weird. Everything is weird. I don't know how else to say it. People ask me all the time and I give a better explanation than I just say it's weird, obviously. But sometime in my conversation, I usually say, well, things are kind of weird. So I'm wondering, do you have any, what's your take on where we are economically, where things are going? I know that's a big question and I don't, you know, I won't hold you to any predictions or anything, but I'm just curious what any insight you have on the economy and how that's affecting real estate, or how it will affect real estate in the near future?
Well, I don't hesitate making predictions, because when I make bad ones, that's and a year later, I have to fess up to that. It makes me a better investor, right? And I think that it's important to hang your hat. You can't just be nowhere. So I'm mm-hmm. happy to make those. I was teaching at a conference with Brandon Turner, by the way. Mm-hmm. He's the BiggerPockets, you know, it yep. used to be the BiggerPockets CEO for a long time. And, you know, in Seattle. And so he was talking with me and Robert Helps was there. The CEO of Real Estate Guys is a famous guy in the real estate marketplace. And so I had a presentation about this. And so I want to share some thoughts from that presentation. And I think the people that were in the room, we had about 250 people listening to us, really appreciated some of these thoughts. The first thought is this: interest rates today are at about 5.6%, roughly 5.6%. But if you have 740 plus credit and you're putting 20% down, which a lot of investors do, it's very common actually, then interest rates today on bankrate.com as of July 23rd, were still 4.990. And 5% may seem very high compared to 2.8%, you know, on Jan 1st. Mm-hmm. But keep this in mind, interest rates, mortgage rates in the US were at 18.5% in 1982. So if you look at U.S. recessions in the last 61 years, there have been 9 U.S. recessions. And so in 1982, the U.S. economy was in a recession because the Fed raised rates so much that mortgage rates were 18.5%. And what most people don't remember or don't know is what happened to the housing market when mortgage rates went to 18.5%. We're at 5 for investors who can invest 20%, or 5.5 for everybody else, right? Mm-hmm. Short answer, and most people, I walked around the room in Seattle at the conference and asked people questions, you know, how much do you think housing went down? And the lowest answer was 20%, right? Some people are 30%. Some people are like, oh my God, that would be the worst crash ever. You know, it was before my time. I don't remember. The truth is, housing went down by 10% in one quarter, immediately following that 18.5% peak, and then bounced up 10% the following quarter and ended up higher at the end of the 1982 recession than at the beginning of the 1982 recession. Mm-hmm. Single family is an extraordinarily sticky asset class. That's what our data tells us. This is just about as sticky. The only other thing that's as sticky as single family demand is demand for oil, for gas. That demand mm-hmm. does not go down regardless of what the price is, right? So the world was using 91 million barrels a day in January. The world is using 91 million barrels a day today, right? So despite the fact that, you know, gas is up 60%. So it's very sticky. Single family is equally sticky. So the people that believe that, you know, it will crash are only looking at 2008. And I urge people to look at the past 9 recessions, right? So one of those recessions was 2008, but there's 8 other data points to look at. The short answer is housing doesn't go down by more than 5% in recessions, even some of the recessions that were pretty harsh. 2008 was not a housing recession. 2008 was an instance in our country's history where millions of people in the banking industry got together with millions of people in the brokerage industry and carried out large-scale fraud on the American consumer, mm-hmm. right? So there was massive, massive evidence of fraud, and 1,000 books have been written about this. The fraud tanked the real estate market. We should have never really gotten to where we did, and somebody should have pulled it back in the 2005 timeframe. So when you look at that one data point to make all of your decisions, you're going to do a really, really bad job. So it's good to look at it as 1 out of 9 data points. And I haven't seen much evidence that real estate prices would go down. The second piece is, let's look at the year before previous recessions, 2007 or 2000, or, you know, go back and look at 1992. So you look at these recessions and look at the year before, and you want to see how weak was the U.S. economy in those years before. What was the unemployment rate? What were household balance sheets looking like? Well, as it happens, this is one of the strongest pre-recession economies in the last 60 years. One of the strongest, not quite the strongest. There was one stronger than this. Mm-hmm. Unemployment is at 3.6%. And despite the fact that the Fed's been now raising interest rates for 6 months and threatening to raise them for 9 months, we haven't seen any decline whatsoever in unemployment. And the reason for that is we had a one-time mass retirement of people that were very close to retirement that basically retired during COVID and did not come back to the workforce. Mm-hmm. So the workforce participation rate is down, which means that anyone who's employed right now can get another job as soon as they get laid off. So what's happening is layoffs are happening and people are immediately getting employed. So the unemployment rate is so stubborn right now, it doesn't even want to move 0.1% from 3.6. It's just stuck there. And the average consumer is getting 5.5% increases every year. I don't even remember the last time the average American got 5%, you know, salary hikes. So the economy is in an extraordinarily strong position because of the fact that these 2 or 3 million people that retired, they took all of the slack out of the workforce. So now we have 11 million jobs open, right? I was walking in Seattle, I was walking about 150 yards and I counted 16 for hire signs, 16, mm-hmm. right? In 100 yards. That's how bad it is. So mm-hmm. in an environment like this, it becomes extraordinarily difficult for housing to go down. So what you're going to see is 5 to 10% declines in these super overheated markets. Obviously, there are some. Boise is one, Tacoma is another. One could even argue that Phoenix, Austin, and Las Vegas could have small declines. Mm-hmm. But small declines actually happened all the time before the last 10 years, where we got used to only seeing home prices go up or really up or ridiculously up. That's mm-hmm. what we've seen in the last 10 years. And that's mm-hmm. not normal. And in normal mm-hmm. markets, you generally have an upward direction with down, then an upward direction down a little. We're going to see that. We're going to see mm-hmm. a slightly choppy marketplace. But when I'm looking at single family, there's 400 plus markets in the US that I track. And by the way, I'm a multifamily guy. I don't buy single family, but I obsessively track single family because I believe single family is the foundation of multifamily. You can't really have a functioning, profitable multifamily market without a functioning, profitable single family market, right? That's the data tells us that very clearly. So I'm very obsessive. 400 markets out there, I think there's half a dozen that could go down by more than 10%. Overall, the US market, the chances of it actually declining as a whole are extraordinarily small.
Yeah. Thank you for taking the time to explain that. That's excellent. So Neil, I don't want to take any more of your time, but before you go, I have your email. I have your information. Is there any particular website mm-hmm. that you want to mention that people can go to that I can mention in the show notes so that they can go to, exactly where you want them to go if they want to learn more about your five metrics, about your education resources and your data, access to your data metrics? Where can people go to access that?
Well, our investment site is growcapitus.com, but I would much rather that you focus on the education side. So Multifamily University, which is multifamily followed by the letter U.com, has 20 plus webinars. They're all data-driven. They're entertaining, interesting. They're about 35, 40 minutes. We get about 50,000 people a year that watch these webinars. And so you're welcome to join there. The one that has the location magic five metric system is actually called Real Estate Secrets. So watch that one first and then watch Real Estate Trends and then watch the impact of interest rates on real estate. So those are the top three that I think will give you incredible aha moments. We all feel nervous when bad things happen in the economy, and right now bad things are happening. The best thing to do is to empower yourself, and then you'll still feel nervous, but now you'll be appropriately nervous, not just nervous because you don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, excellent. Well, thank you, Neil. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today.
Thanks so much, John.
All righty. Take care.